when they first asked me to give one of the shiurim this morning, so they told me the topic is villains and heroes in Tanakh. So I said, that's an interesting topic. You know, what would you like me to speak about? So he kind of paused through Halpern and he said, we have a lot of, you know, people speaking about some of the more obscure characters in the Torah. We don't have, like, some of the regulars. So I said, you mean, like, I don't know, the Avos, Imahos, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu? He said, yeah, we don't have any of those. So I said, okay, great, you know, I'll do Moshe Rabbeinu, fascinating character. And then I realized as I'm trying to, you know, and I am a Tanakh teacher, so of course I've done lots of different things on Moshe Rabbeinu. But as, you know, I'm going through the sources here, and this is a little bit of a disclaimer, you know, Moshe takes up a lot of Tanakh. He's a fascinating character because he is one of the few characters that we really see a very strong transition. He's not who he is from the beginning of the story as the same person that he is at the end, and we see the transition throughout the story, but again, it covers so much ground. So, you know, just keep that in mind when we go through some of the sources. You know, in a way, it would have been easier if we did, like, one minor character that's very contained rather than try to go through a whole gamut, you know, which a character that really touches the whole gamut of coming to Chumash Torah. I'll accept for breaking. Here's some more of my komos. Just to share with you, it's always good to start with a funny story. Rabbi Dr. David Berger, one of my teachers from Revel, shared a story with me outside. He said, you're the one talking about Moshe. So he said, told me a story. I just thought it was funny to start this way, that a man who was trying to impress, a Jewish man trying to impress his non-Jewish girlfriend. They met, they were together at a Rambam conference, and he said to his girlfriend, and he said, you know, look at the scholars and the minds that the Jews have produced. He says, look at Karl Marx, look at Sigmund Freud, look at Moses Maimonides. And his girlfriend turned to him and said, is that his last name? I never knew what that was. So that was funny. I said, okay, I'll share it with the group. And on one personal note, I just want to just welcome my, you know, personal friends and family members who came to be supportive today, and especially my husband and my father, who I have this chus of speaking in front of, because usually it's women only at these things. So it's very nice to welcome you here, and we have the opportunity to speak in front of you as well. Okay, so let's begin. Moshe, where do we start? Like we said, we know Moshe from the very beginning of his life, which is not so regular. You know, we follow Moshe from the beginning of his life to the end, which is, again, he's really the only character in Tanakh like that, and specific details about that life. So if you look at the very beginning of Sefer Shemot, this is where Moshe emerges. And I started with Perek Bet in Sefer Shemot, where we have the Vayelach Ish Mibeit Levi, Vayikach Et Bat Levi. And just to keep in mind, it's interesting, we're trying to develop, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu, again, from Prince of Egypt to Prince of God, or really, really specifically from Ish Mitzri, from Man of Egypt, Egyptian man, to Ish Elokim. At the end of his life, he's called the Man of God. So what we want to do is go through that transition. So at the beginning of his life, just to keep in mind that we're talking about identities, he doesn't have an identity at the beginning of Sefer Shemot, but he doesn't, along with everybody else, doesn't either. And whenever I teach my Shemot classes, I always throw this question out. We never really discuss it until sometime at the end of the semester, but I'll leave it to you for food for thought. It's so interesting that Sefer Shemot is called Sefer Shemot, which means the Book of Names, and yet names are so clearly missing from the story. Vayelech ish mibeit Levi, vayikach et bat Levi, a man from the house of Levi. We're told through Midrashim, through sources, that it's Amram who married Yocheved. We never see that in the Torah. Not only that, but they have the Achot Moshe, and Miriam is called the Achot. Moshe is called the Na'ar, right? Moshe is only called Moshe because Bat Paro, another nameless person, goes and takes him from the water, and that's why she calls him Moshe, because she pulled him from the water. So it's very interesting that here this is the Book of Names, and yet people are obviously very clearly nameless. So I'll leave you with that thought. Think about it if you want to come up and discuss it afterwards. Yeah.
But the Torah doesn't identify the different texts.
Yes, no, Moshe, yeah. The not Yocheved and Amram. Moshe ben Amram. Oh, that's true, in one context.
By the bush.
No.
When
they give the whole genealogy, not by the snare. Right, that's true. But it's clearly missing from here. No, we know it's Amram, we know it's Yocheved, Yocheved's not mentioned. And Miriam, of course, is mentioned later, but here she's called Achot.
All
right. But no, but not in this context of Moshe's birth. No, absolutely mentioned, but specifically not in this context where you're forming, where the beginning of Moshe is life.
It's not your soul source.
So, right, exactly. So anyway, so then we go on with the story. And again, so there's no identity here. So where does his identity emerge? Clearly he develops an identity. So let's start from the very beginning. And there are basically three incidents that Moshe gets involved in that we know of before the Sneh incident, which we'll talk about also. So obviously. So the first incident we see is, again, in source number one, later on in the parak, where we have Vayigdal Moshe, Vayihi Bayamim Haravim Hahem, Vayigdal Moshe, Vayetze Elachav, Vayar Besivlotam. So Moshe gets older, and Rashi, of course, asks the question there. We just said Moshe was older, but there's two levels of, one is he's growing up physically, the other one is emotionally maturing, he's maturing. And he goes out, Vayetze Elachav, Vayar Besivlotam. And he goes out to check out Besivlotam, in their suffering. And we'll see later how Rashi, what Rashi says about that. And what happens? And Vayar Ish Mitri Make Ish Ivri Me'achav. And he sees the Mitri beating up the Jew, and Vayifen Kovacho, Vayar Kien Ish, Vayachat HaMitri Vayit Menehu Bachol. He looks both ways, he sees no one's there, no man is there, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. And he kills the Mitri and he hides him in the sand. And then the next episode we have that we see about Moshe, and then the next day he sees two Jews fighting. And he says to, one of them, Lama Takereyacha, and they say, why are you the judge over us? We saw what you did yesterday. And that's when he runs away. But again, that's the second incident he gets involved in. And then the last incident that we see him getting involved in before he, goes on to the next step of Nivu at the Sneh, is when he sees the daughters of Yisro by the Be'er, and he and the Roim, the shepherds, are bullying them, and he gets involved there by Yaka Moshe, by Yoshiim. And Vayashket Sonam, and that's the place that he's called, the Ish Mitzri, when Yitro says, why'd you get back so early? Usually they give you a hard time. And their response was, and I underlined that later on, but Tomarna, Ish Mitzri, Ish Mitzri Hatzileinu Miyad Haroim. So he's referred to, he's clearly an Ish Mitzri. That's, again, if you want to see an identity, he's referred to as an Ish Mitzri. Not by name, like everybody, all the other nameless people here, but here he's referred to as an Ish Mitzri, that's his identity. So again, what we want to try to understand is how he went from an Ish Mitzri to the very end of his life, where he's called the Ish Elukim, the man of God. So let's talk about his background for a little bit. Again, he wasn't just an Ish Mitzri, that's what I call it. License here, and you called it Prince of Egypt as opposed to just Man of Egypt, because he's really a prince. I mean, he's not just an Egyptian man, but he's really a prince, and that's what Ebenezer tells us in source number two. Ebenezer asks the question, why he had to grow up this way, and Ebenezer responds. He says, "U'machshavot Hashem amko," that Hashem's ways are deep, and he says, "U'mi yuchal lamod b'sodo." He continues. He says, Hashem makes a plan because specific reasons that he does things. And he says, "Ulai savav Hashem ze sheigdal Moshe bebeit hamalchut liot nafsho al madriga ha'elyona v'derech halimud v'harigulut v'lo tiyesh feila urigulut liot beit avadim." Maybe he needed to grow up in this environment so he wasn't used to being a slave. So his nefesh wasn't slave-like. He needed to be educated. He needed to have confidence. And maybe that's why he grew up this way. And then he gives another reason. And he says... look how he killed the Mitzri, exactly, and he had the confidence to do that, maybe because he grew up, and how he grew up, he had the confidence to do the things that he got involved in. And then he continues, he says, "Ve'od davar acher, ki ilu haya godal ben achiv, v'achiru minurav, lo hayu yirayim mimenu ki achshavu ke'achad mehem." And the second answer that the Ebenezer gives is basically like familiarity breeds contempt. Like if they were so familiar with him and they had grown up with Moshe, hey, we used to take baths together, how much respect are they going to give him? He was a man of mystery, and they could have more respect for him because he was coming from a different place than they were coming from. Right, none of one or the other. Anytime you have a davar acher, there's value to both answers, for sure. No, so I'm throwing out both answers. Absolutely. No, they're not contradictory at all. And I think, anytime someone gives a davar acher is because there's value in both, and it could be, absolutely. So, let's look at the stories a little bit. So now the specific stories. So the first story, Vayigdal Moshe, and if you look at Rashi in source number three, again Vayigdal Moshe, we said he gets older, more mature, and Vayar B'Sivlotam. Look at Vayar B'Sivlotam. Rashi asks, what does that mean? Why B'Sivlotam? Why not Vayar Sivlotam? He saw their suffering. Why he saw in their suffering? He says, Natan Eina V'Libo Liot Meitzar Alehem. He didn't just sympathize with them, he empathized with them. Leah says, Ra'ah Hashem be'onyi. He empathized with them. He really felt for them. He was pained by them. So you see here that he's a man of justice. You know, what was he looking for? It's interesting when he says, you know, vayifen kovacho, vayar kiein ish, a lot of different explanations of what exactly he's looking for. And if you look at source number 4 and 5, you know, just two examples, a lot of other examples out there, reasons out there, but Aktava Kabbalah in source number 4 says he was looking for a Jew, someone to care, right? He says, Chashav Moshe shechad me'achiv ha'ivrim ha'umdim sivo, yeah, mine is also, yitzkomem, I thought it was going to be better, yitzkomem al ha'mitri v'yatzil et achav. So according to this source, according to Akshava Kabbalah, he was looking for a fellow Jew to get involved. He was looking for a fellow Jew to stand up and say, this is not right, my brother is being beaten. And he saw nobody was sticking up for the fellow Jews. If you look at the Emek Dover, then it's Siv in source number 5. What was he looking for? And again, it could be both. Makeh Yishi Bri Me'achiv. He says he kau lo bishkil atzalut ezo atzalut v'kadome ela bishkil shehu ivri avahu me'achav. So he says what he saw was an ish mitri makeh ish ivri. Why is he called makeh? Why does it say ish mitri makeh ish ivri? The only reason the Egyptian was beating up the Jew was not because he was being lazy, he wasn't doing his work, because he was an ish ivri. He was beating him up because the Egyptians, you know, persecuted the Jews. So vayif en kovacho, he says according to the Nativ, he was looking for an Egyptian. He was looking for a cop. He was looking for some Egyptian policeman to come and say, this is wrong. So again, depending on how you see that, he was looking for someone to care that there's an injustice here. And he saw on either side, and he saw there was no one there. And that's why he got involved. I can't continue until I share one other explanation, which is an unbelievable explanation of this story here, which I heard from someone who was a student at Yeshiva College when I was a student at Stern, and he had come to YU having newly converted to Judaism, growing up with an Italian Catholic mother and a Jewish father. And the way that he understood the story, really incredible person, and the way that he understood the story really, I mean, it blew me away. It's an amazing explanation. But what he says is that here Moshe grew up in the palace of Paro, and he really has an identity crisis. He doesn't know who he is. Right? On one hand, he's Egyptian. On the other hand, his mother nursed him, so he knows he's Jewish. So who is he? So he goes that Vayabisivlotam. He wants to see what's going on outside. The Jews are slaves to the Egyptians. Who does he relate to? Who is he? Who does he identify with? And what does he see? You know, he's a little bit of both. He's half Egyptian, half Jewish. He goes out and he sees Vayar Ish Mitri Makeh Ish Ivri Me'achav. He sees his two worlds colliding. At that moment, he can't be both. You can't be both. You can't be riding, you know, both fences or whatever the expression goes. If they're both at odds with each other. So when he sees this sign, what happens? Vayifen kovacho, my friend says, Vayar ki einish. He looks both ways, and what? He sees there's no person there. He sees he's not a person. He can't be Egyptian and Jewish at the same time when the two worlds are colliding like this. So what happens? What's Moshe Rabbeinu's decision at this moment? Vayachatz ha-mitri v'yitzmaneu v'chol. He kills the mitri inside him and hides him in the sand forever. It wasn't my idea. And the beauty of it is, first of all, it's a great explanation, but the beauty of it is that it wasn't my idea, right? That here's somebody, that's the beauty of Torah. Here's somebody who related to Moshe Rabbeinu on a level that me, having grown up in my, you know, Orthodox home, FFB, from birth, never would have thought of. Because I didn't relate to Moshe Rabbeinu in this way, where you hear someone who grew up, you know, half Jewish, half Catholic. I know there's no such thing as half, but you know what I mean. And was looking for an identity and had an identity crisis and related to Moshe Rabbeinu in a way that I necessarily wouldn't have done that. So anyway, I think it's an amazing explanation. But I do think that, you know, whether you understand that, and I think they're all right. I think you take a little bit of all of them. They're not mutually exclusive. But I think that this is really a turning point in Moshe's life, when this is, you know, this is what he chooses. But again, back to the, you know, champion of justice. So that's very clear that he's a champion of justice. And if you see so then he gets involved with the two Jews fighting again. I could have done a whole shiur just on those three incidents, but we have a lot more to Moshe than the beginning of his life, where we have to get transitionary points. Anyway, so if you look at the Rambam in the next source, Nayaka Moshe Vajdian, this is with the Benot Yitro, he says, Shafilu le'achar shefachad ubarach, and he points out so interestingly that even after he's running away, he runs away to Midian afraid afraid for his life, and he still gets involved again. You think he would have learned, like, okay, this time I'm going to look the other way. But he couldn't. He couldn't look the other way because he couldn't handle when he saw these bullies bullying these women. So you see, he's a champion of justice, and he just couldn't stand injustice. That's how we're presented, that's how we're, Moshe's being presented to us. And I think it's also very important to point out, that the Torah does give us all three incidents. In other words, you want to tell us that he's a champion of justice? Okay, so he's a champion of justice. So he doesn't like when things are done that are unjust. But what's so interesting here, so why did the Torah have to give, we know that the Torah is, end of Amir Tarva Torah, there's nothing extra in the Torah, it's succinct, so why tell us all three stories? And I think the point is, because if you look at the difference between the stories, so in the first story, Moshe's getting involved, he's an Ish Mitri versus an Ish Ivri. So you might say to yourself, okay, he's getting involved because the Jewish person is the victim here. So he's standing up for the Jew. Okay. Then comes along the next story, but he wouldn't have done it necessarily if it wasn't a non-Jew versus a Jew. But then comes the next story, and here there are two Jews fighting. So he's getting involved even when there are two Jews. He still sees something wrong going on. And then comes along the last story and says, okay, well, you might say about the first two, the only reason he's getting involved is because he has no Jews, right? He's getting involved because there are Jews involved. The last story, they're non-Jews versus non-Jews. You have the Roim, who are not Jewish, and you have the Benot Yitro that are not Jewish, and he's still getting involved. And what you see from that, I think that's the yesod here, that the Torah is telling us all three stories to show that it's the injustice that he can't handle. It doesn't matter who the injustice is being done to or by, but when there's injustice, he gets involved. So, if you look, I'm just, I know I have seven Rashi and eight the Rambam, but I'm going to do eight first, because then we'll go into the next point. So if you look at source number eight...
Dr. Scheffner, the last point, is in the name of whom?
It's in the name of, I think Nachama Leibowitz mentions it.
I was going to say it.
I think so, yeah.
I want to know
yeah, yeah. I think she mentioned it. I think that there are a few people that mentioned it, but I think I saw it there in that context. Anyway, so if you look at source number eight, so the Rambam says, Vayidal Moshe Vayetze Lachav. So the Rambam... when you first start being a Navi, the beginning of being a Navi, that to be a Navi, and I think it's just such an amazing point, the preparation to be a Navi is that you have to do something meaningful. You have to do something of value. That's a very interesting perspective. And Kigon Hatzalat Kutzat Chasidim, Midei Kutzat Rishayim, and here in the context of Moshe, like saving someone from Rasha'im, Wasalat Kasid Gadol, Hashpat Tova, Alanashim Rabim, Bimza Misad Atzmo, Lekachito Rut, Vizachifa Lepula, to push, he needs to be pushed to action. And he says, Vizeni Kram Ruach Hashem. And that's what Ruach Hashem, and that's what's called Ruach Hashem. Vidaki, Vidoma Lekach, Hazelo Nifrad Moshe Rabbeinu Me'et, Shehi Elegil Bagrut, Ulefikach Nitorel, Haroget Hamitzvil, and Zok, Bechotei Mishnei Hanitzim. And that's what pushed Moshe to action. So he's making a point that Moshe had this Ruach Hashem in here, and part of that Ruach Hashem is not just having potential to get involved, but to actualize that potential of getting involved. And that's what he does here.
This is number eight?
So this is number eight, yes. So it's the preparation to the Rambam, based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin. So the preparation from Torah to Rambam, Sefer. So you see the preparation for a Navi, you need to do something meaningful and of value. All right. So we see that Moshe is certainly doing something meaningful here. He cares about injustice, to the point that he can't stand seeing injustice. And that's why, yes, he's going to be the perfect person to be chosen to go into Mitzrayim here. So now one last point that we have to look at before we go to the next step, which is the Nevuah step, which is how does he view Bnei Yisrael? And that's going to be something, part of his development is going to be his relationship with Bnei Yisrael. Certainly his relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu becoming a Navi, but his relationship with Bnei Yisrael also. And what we see here, according to the Mepharshim across the board, is that that he's a little down on Bnei Yisrael from the beginning. And if you look in source number 7, when it says, Vayira Moshe, he was afraid after the incident with the two people fighting. That's what caused him to run away. And when it says he was afraid, so the Rashi points out there, Kipshuto, yes, Kipshuto, like he was afraid, either he was just afraid, and that's why he ran away, he was afraid for his life. He says, or, Midrashenu, Da'aglo, Al-Shara Av Yisrael, Rasha'im, Dalaturin, Asher Me'ata, Shema Einam, Ru'yin, Ligael. So it's Rashi, that the second answer he brings is that maybe he's afraid that they're not worthy of Geula. In other words, because there are Rasha'im there. Clearly, he sees that the two Jews who are fighting, someone's going to tell on him. They certainly made it seem, which they did, that they were going to tell on him, and he's thinking, wow, they're not the nicest people, that maybe there are Rishayim here who are going to go and tell, and because there are Rishayim here that tell on each other, they don't care about each other, so maybe that's a reason that they're not worthy of being saved. Like, I feel so bad that this is happening to them, maybe they deserve it. And then Rashi continues, Achenu v'hadavar, and Rashi points out there also to Mashma'o, now I know. And he says, Midrasho, he says, Nodali adavar shayiti tama alav, machato Yisrael mikol shivim umot, liyot nirpim davotat perech, aval ro'im, aval ro'eh ani, shehem ru'im l'kach. So again, Achenu v'hadavar, Rashi says, maybe now I know, you know, I wondered before why these people are being picked on out of all the people in the world. Maybe I know now why they're being picked on, because they deserve it. So again, one of the things that we'll see in his development is, you know, he certainly learns to be a strong supporter of Bnei Israel as opposed to be questioning, you know, their worthiness. You know, certainly he has moments in his life that he can certainly question their worthiness, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, and he sticks up for them. Yes, question.
So if Moshe already so early in life cares so much about Bnei Israel and their future, then why is he called an Ish Mitzri?
Okay, good. At this point, you're saying about a third story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think that's a good question. He already got involved twice. In other words, but that's what his identity was. In other words, he's called an Ish Mitzri, remember, by the people that encountered him, that took, you know, had an encounter with him. He's called an Ish Mitzri by the daughters of Yisro. So that's how they saw him. He was a Mitzri. I mean, he grew up, he was dressed like a Mitzri, he grew up in the palace of Pharaoh. He wasn't a Jewish slave like the rest of the Jews, you know? So that's how they're, you know, what I wanted to point out from that, and I think the Torah's pointing out, is that's how he identified himself, even though we see that maybe, no, I shouldn't say, that's the outer identification, that's his outer identification. That maybe he's beginning to identify himself more as an Ish, you know, Yehudi, you know, as a Jew and not an Egyptian, but certainly his outer identification was that of an Egyptian man, of an Egyptian prince. And that's why the transition is so much more profound. Anyway, okay, so moving along here. So now let's look at how he starts out, you know, the beginning of Moshe as a Navi. Before we look at how Moshe started out as a Navi and his whole education, you know, again, he has to learn how to be a Navi, he has to learn about his relationship between him and Hashem, and his relationship between him and Bnei Israel, between Bnei Israel and him. So if you look at, so the next story, you know, in Parak Gimel, that's the famous Sneh story, and before we even look at the Sneh part of the story, at the conversation between Hashem and Moshe at the Sneh, we're only doing a little piece of that, it's very important to focus on one thing that Rashi picks up on when it says Moshe haya ro'eh tzon yitro chotzno kohen midyan. Remember, we have to keep in mind here, Moshe wasn't always who he ended up being. I mean, he was a shepherd here. He was a shepherd. Even now, okay, he's a champion of justice. He's getting involved. He can't stand when injustice is being done. He's still living for many years. There's a whole machlokas about how many years he was a shepherd and how many years he was a shepherd before he went to Mitzrayim, before the Sneh. And there's a whole machlokas. There's actually a question about a bunch of years there. And it's interesting, this is a total side point, but it's interesting how the Mefarshim, you know, try to reconcile that. I know, my husband just pointed out to me that when the Midrashim says that he was a king in Ethiopia for a bunch of years, I know how the movie, not to bring, you know, Lahavdil, Ten Commandments deals with it, is that he ages at the Sneh. Like, I don't know if you remember that movie, but he goes in, and we used to watch every year, and then, even though it was usually on Pesach, when it was Motzei Pesach, and he comes out, he goes into the Sneh, you know, with a nice brown beard, and then he comes out all gray and everything. So I was thinking, oh, maybe that's, you know, somebody there knew that there was a problem with the years. So that's an interesting way of dealing with that. But a lot of them, of course, deal with that time difference for sure. But the point is, he wasn't always that way. And that's what's important to keep in mind, that when he goes into the Sneh, he's a shepherd. So what made Hashem choose him there? And all the Mefarshim across the board say, there's also hints to that here. When it says that he was the Roeh of Yitro, it says, Vayinhaget Hatzon Achara Midbar, Vayavo Aharachim Chareva. So he would take the sheep out into the Midbar. And of course the question there, which all the Mefarshim raise, is why is this necessary? What do you mean Achar HaMidbar? Why do we need to know where he's taking Yitro's sheep? I mean, the biggest thing in Moshe's life is about to happen here. And why do we have to know that he's taking the sheep all the way out to the Midbar? So Rashi points out there in number 10, he says, Achar HaMidbar, litrachek min hagezel, shelo yiru b'sadot achirim. This is such a profound Rashi, right? Because he wants to make sure that the sheep are going far away, so it's hefker field, so that he's not going to steal from anybody. But why is that an amazing Rashi? Rashi's so consistent. We're just coming out of Parshas Lech Lecha. I have little children. Anyone has little children, grandchildren here, come home with a project. What's your project? The sheep with a muzzle on it, right? Anybody remember that sheep with the muzzle project? So the sheep with the muzzle, why? Because we know that Avram and Lot, and this is last week's Parsha, Avram is Roi, and then Lot's shepherds had a fight, and what were they fighting about? And Rashi there says, what were they fighting about? Because Lot's shepherds would let them graze in other people's fields, and Avram would muzzle, shepherds would muzzle his sheep, and litrachek min hagezel. And so interesting that here Rashi is so consistent. You know, Rashi is giving us a hint as to what makes godless, what makes someone great. It's it's not, I was going to say simple mitos, but it's honesty. It starts somewhere. You know, he's just, he doesn't want to steal. Maybe that's part of, I mean, for sure, that's the one thing, the last thing we know about him before he goes into the snet. I mean, Rashi's consistent with this also. He goes through the avos. Just another example is Yitzchak. When Yitzchak tells Yaakov, he's telling Yaakov he wants to give brachos to Yaakov and Esav, he wants to give Esav bracha, Yitzchak tells Esav to go into the field. He says, Latzud lo tzayid or something, Latzud lo tzayid, I think. And Rashi there says, what is he telling him to go out and hunt into the hefker field? It's just so interesting. Every great person, you know, Rashi, not every great, but Rashi is consistent in this idea of, you know, staying away, being honest. So we see that honesty. In source number 11, I wanted to show you how the Sforno, and again, there are other opinions on this also. The Sforno, I think, is also consistent in how the Sforno understands it. Why does it say Achar HaMidbar? And this is another school of thought. Hu levado litz bodedu litz palel. That he's going by himself to meditate, to daven. It's more of a, you know, theological answer, I guess, you know, than you know, as opposed to Rashi, which is more to show the honesty here, to show his connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is interesting because Hashem hasn't yet introduced himself, but there is a Masorah of Hashem at this point. But, you know, to commune with Hashem, to meditate, and the Sforno is also consistent in that, you know, later on when Bnei Israel camped by Har Sinai, and Moshe, it says, Vayal Moshe, and he went up to the mountain. And again, Sforno points out there, he's going up, so Bnei Israel can be busy with Tzorchei HaMachaneh, with the practical setting up of the camp, and he's going up to Litzvodeiru Litzpalel. So it's just interesting how the Mepharshim are consistent in their focus on Moshe. So moving along now. We're doing okay, we're fine. We have a lot more to Moshe. I'm just going to take out the whole Bamidbar piece, by the way. That's a disclaimer at the beginning also. We just can't do everything. Anyway, so if you look at source number 12, there's a beautiful Benu Bachya about the Sneh. Sorry, I know you all switched your pages, but just go back to the Pshat for a minute. Everything comes from the Pshat. Everything has a source of everything. So if you look at source number 9, we just didn't go through the Pshat. All we were talking about was Achar HaMidbar. And if you see, it's from Pasuk Bet in Paragimel, Vayar Malach Hashem Elav, Vayera Malach Hashem Elav, Velabat Esh, Mitoch HaSneh, Vayar Veinei HaSneh Bo'er Ba'esh, VaSneh Inenu Kal. That a Malach of Hashem appears to him from the flame of the fire, from inside the bush, and he sees, and Moshe sees, and he sees the snet, the bush is burning, it's surrounded by fire, but it's not burning. Vayomer Moshe, Asura Naveret, Tamarel Gadol Hazeh, Madua Lo Yivar HaSneh. So Moshe says to himself, let me turn and see what this, you know, great, you know, vision here is. Why is the snet not burning? Vayar Hashem Kisar Lerot, so Hashem saw that he turned to see. Vayikra Elav Elokim Mitoch HaSneh, Vayomer Moshe, Moshe, Vayomer Hineni. And Hashem calls him from the snet, and he says, Moshe, and Moshe responds by Hineni. And that's when the rest of the story, you know, and Hashem says, take off your shoes. And Moshe, and next pasuk, which I cut off there, but it says that Moshe turns away, ki yarei mehabit el halokim, because he's afraid to see God. So if you look at the Rabbeinu Bachya, here, now you can turn, in source number 12, the Rabbeinu Bachya, it's a beautiful Rabbeinu Bachya here, talks about how Moshe couldn't perceive Hashem all at once. Again, we're talking about the transition of Moshe. This is the transition of Moshe into becoming a Navi. That there's a transitionary period that Hashem couldn't just introduce himself and all at once that Moshe knows exactly who Hashem is. And that's why Rabbeinu Bachya talks about this nevuah being gradual. It's part of the educational part of Moshe's education of becoming a Navi. That it's gradual here. That the first thing he sees is the fire, and then he sees the malach, and then he sees the shechina, or he hears the shechina from calling from mitoch hasneh. So Rabbeinu Bachya says, Inyan ha-parsha hazot, ki Moshe hisik shlosha inyanim ve'eluhim. Moshe saw three different things. He perceived three different things, and these are the things. Ha'esh ha-malach ve'ashchina. Tchila ra'esh, shaitam zakachat basneh, ve'ein hasneh nisraf, the first thing he sees, and it's interesting, the first thing he sees is this bush, you know, surrounded by fire. So he comes, you know, he sees the fire. So he wants to take a closer look. And that's why he comes closer. And so interesting, you know, we're not going into that now, but all the reasons why it's a snare, why was it a bush, why is it, you know, a burning bush, why was this the symbol in the beginning, Hashem's debut into the world, that's basically what it is here. You know, as Mepharshim points out, Hashem had debuted into the world with the Avos, but to individual people. This is the first time Moshe is going to have to give a message to Hamon Am, to the whole world, basically, about Hashem. So some of the Mepharshim talk, you know, all the Mepharshim talk about why a Sneh, you know, does it have to do with the Shlichot, and, you know, we're not going into that now, you know, maybe, you know, because the bush is Bnei Israel and surrounded by the fire, which is a mitzvah, but it's never going to destroy them. You know, a lot of nice symbolism about that. But one of the things that some of the Mepharshim say is that, you know, maybe he was just trying to get Moshe's attention. He wants to show him. Maybe it doesn't have to do with the shlichut. Maybe, you know, Moshe perceived that it has to do with the shlichut because that's what was on his mind, you know, what was going on in Mitzrayim. Anyway, it's just interesting to know. So that's why he came closer. V'zehu shamar asura na ve'eret hamara hagadol hazeh. Klomar, ere ha'pele hagadol. Im nishtaneh ha'sneh mishar ha'itzim, or nishtaneh ha'esh mishar ha'ishut. There was something miraculous here, and he wanted to see, is there something different with the bush? Is this a different bush? Is this a different fire? You know, something's going on here. If he thought it was the fire from God, it was a divine fire, he wouldn't have come closer right away. Right? So his perception deepened and strengthened after he saw the fire. So he came to take a closer look. That was the first thing. And we also don't know how long that whole SNET story took place. It wasn't necessarily one day. It's from Parsha Tei 7. There's different opinions about that. But then the next thing he saw was the malach, and his perception is getting stronger. So the last thing he saw was Hashem. You know, again, it was just gradual. And that's what he says, that this is the beginning of the Nebuah of Moshe. It's very exciting. This is it. So Hashem wants to teach him gradually, little by little, until his perception gets stronger. And he gives a great mashal. He says, mashal lemadav adomeh. He says, like a person sitting in a dark room for many hours, for a long time, if you come out into the bright sunlight, right, what happens? You squint, you're blinded for a minute. You can't see everything all at once when you've been sitting in darkness for so long. So that's why we squint, because only a little bit of light gets to come in. So that's what Moshe said. Same thing with Moshe Rabbeinu, that he saw little by little because he was sitting in darkness his whole life, and if he comes out and he sees the Shekhinah all at once, he'll be blinded by it. So that was the education here. And, you know, just moving along, it's just I just pointed out here that the Rambam and Maran Rucham points out that the word lehabit, you know, when it says Moshe, ki arei mehabit el halokim, that Moshe is afraid to see Hashem. And we know in other cases also, the Rambam says that lehabit is habagat haseichel. It's not just to see, but to really to understand. It's not just he's afraid to see Hashem. What does that mean? What is he seeing? He's afraid to comprehend what he's seeing. He's afraid to understand it. I just think it's interesting because you have that in English also. You know, someone talking to you and telling you their problems, and you say, oh, I see what you're saying. You don't see what they're saying. You don't see words coming out of their mouths. You understand it. So that's the lehabit. So it's just so fascinating. I find this so fascinating that here he's afraid of seeing Hashem, and meanwhile later on he's the one talking to Hashem panim al panim. So clearly, you know, development here. Okay, so a couple last points before we get to the transitionary part of the story, which I think of Moshe's character, which I think is very, very, very profound. But you know, we see here by the SNES, so even though Hashem is educating him in terms of Nebuah, he's still, you know, down on Bnei Israel, we see from this story, and he's still down on himself. You know, he still doesn't have, let's say, the personal self-confidence, even though it's interesting because, you know, now he's in the, you know, he has stuck up, he has gotten involved in the three incidents that we talked about at the beginning, but you see that even with himself, you know, I mean, again, like, give a whole shiur on that, just the whole conversation between Hashem and Moshe at the Sinai, we're not going to go into that, but all the different concerns he has there, so I just picked out one of those, which is the most personal one, which is probably Ish Darim and Lo Ish Darim and Ochi. But before we do that, in source number 14, you know, his third concern is Bayan Moshe Bayomer Behein Lo Yaminu Li V'Lo Yishmu V'Koli Hiyomer Lo Nirei Lach Hashem. So his concern is, what if the Israel don't believe me? What if they don't listen to me? And of course, it's a question because Hashem just said they would. But anyway, so I just want to show you here how he's still down with the Israel. He still doesn't have confidence in them. Trying to follow along, you know, Rashi's consistency with that. Rashi points out Hashem responds and he says, Maze biyadecha, you know, what's in your hands? And he says, Vayomer Mateh, and Moshe says, Mateh. And Hashem says, throw it down on the ground. The Mateh will turn into a nachash, into a snake, and that's going to be a sign for you. So Rashi says, Maze biyadecha. He says, he's trying to show him, Atachayav Vilko, Chachashadta Viksherim. What's in your hands? Why does Hashem have to say it like that? He knows there's a stick in his hand. He should have said, take the stick, it'll turn into a snake. What's in your hands? Oh, there's a stick. Maybe you need to hit yourself with the stick because you're Choshev Viksherim. You're questioning, you're suspicious of Bnei Yisrael. you know, that they're not going to listen to you. Why are you so down on them? Why are you assuming that they're not going to listen to you? But again, I'm just trying to show you Moshe's attitude to Bnei Israel is not, you know, where it's supposed to be yet, you know, to make him into the leader for them. And of course, you know, Rashi also points out, why does the Matzah turn into a Nachash? Why specifically a Nachash? He says, Remez lo shesiper lashon hara Yisrael, right? That the Nachash is the symbol of Lashon Hara, speaking Lashon Hara in Bnei Israel. Anyway, so moving along, we don't have so much more time, so source number 15, I just want to show you, there's a lot of different explanations on Lo Ishvarim Anokhi, which is, like I said, the most personal of the five concerns that Moshe has with Hashem of the Sneh, but one of my favorite ones is the Chazal, Luke Sato, who says that Ha'emet ki lo haya Moshe Ishvarim ba'al koach ha'dibur. You know, everybody tries to give different explanations. Rashi says maybe he stuttered, he couldn't say certain words. And Rashbam says famously he didn't speak Egyptian very well, which is an interesting explanation. But there's problems with each answer here. And he says, you know, Chazal says, well, maybe he's Moshe Ishanav. He's so modest. It goes into his personality. He's just not an orator. He says, I'm not an orator. I'm not a fancy speaker. I'm not eloquent enough. You know, like, I just think that's just such an amazing shot because he's basically saying, I'm not going to make a good lawyer. No offense to any lawyers out there, but sometimes, you know, you have to work with what you got and you have to just say things in an eloquent way, even if you maybe don't have it. Sometimes you do, and good lawyers do a lot of good things. I don't want to insult anybody, but some of my best friends, my sister's a lawyer. But the truth is that sometimes, you know, you have to just speak eloquently and you know, even if you don't have so much to speak about. And that's basically, and that fits into the Moshe Ishanav, we call Adam, that he's so modest. And what's so ironic about it is that later, you know, he thinks he's not such a good speaker here, and yet he becomes the greatest advocate of Bnei Israel. And we'll talk about that at the highest point, you know, up on Har Sinai, how he really, you know, he advocates for Bnei Israel, and he becomes the greatest lawyer for them twice, by Har Sinai and then after Chayt HaMeraglim as well. Anyway, okay, so moving along, so I want to finish this up. Now after post-Yitziat Mitzrayim, one very quick point there, we see the education is still going on. Fine, Bnei Israel leave Mitzrayim. Source number 16 is Perek Yud Zayin, which is in Bishalach, you know, one of the complaints of Bnei Israel by Rafidim, by Reb Ha'ami Moshe. We see after Mitzrayim, Bnei Israel is still fighting with Moshe. He gets frustrated here. And what does he say? Vayitzak Moshe Hashem. You know, they're thirsty, and he says to Hashem, he says, Ma esel amaze od matuskaluni. What am I going to do with this nation? And they're always in trouble when Moshe calls him amaze, or when Hashem calls him amaze. And or when your parents says, you know, what am I going to do with this child? But anyway, so and he says, Od matuskaluni, they're gonna stone me soon. And Hashem says, Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Avor lifnei ha'am v'kach itcha mizikne Yisrael umatcha asher kita boet ha'yor kach b'yadecha v'halachta. And Hashem says, go and take this Canaan with you and take the stick, your matet, that you performed miracles with and go and I'll meet you by this rock and you'll hit the rock and water will come out. And that's the first rock story. That's not the chukah story, although some say it's the same story, but anyway, we're not going to go into that. So what you see through the Mefarshim here, and I have a parish here from the Sefer Azor and the Medrash Tanchuma in 17, so 16, part of 16 and then 17, where you see the education. Again, Hashem is educating Moshe. By the Sneh, he was educating Moshe about being a Navi. Here, he's educating Moshe about caring for Bnei Israel, about being a leader. When Moshe says, what am I going to do with these people? They're going to stone me soon. And says the Sefer Zohar here that Kanamar Moshe, Odmat Iskaluni, Amar Lo Kadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe, Einata Hazman Litva El Boncha, Ela Avor Litnei Am, Ve'er'en Miyoshit Yadon Negdecha. And he says, and what Hashem is saying to Moshe is that Moshe's concerned that he's going to be stoned. He's upset about himself. Hashem is saying, drop it. It's not about you. Don't be concerned about what they're going to do to you right now. Don't be concerned about yourself. Show concern for them. And that's what the Mefarshim points out. Hashem says, take the mateh. Because once he takes that mateh, they're going to know, oh, Moshe's going to help. Something big is going to happen once that stick is in my hand. And that's why he says, Avor lifnei ha'am, pass in front of them. Let them know that you're helping them. And that's what the Medrash Tanchuma says. I don't have time to read through the whole thing in source number 17. But, you know, actually, I read part of it. It says, Amar Moshe l'knei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when Ribono Ha'olam, Ben Chala Ve'ni, Ani Harog, Atal Merli Al Tafkid Kenegdam, Ki Tamar La'sa'er V'chaykecha, V'hei Bikshu L'skaluni. You told me to take care of them and to, you know, nurture them and take care of them, and now they want to kill me. What am I going to do? And Hashem says, and here the Medrash says, Hashem calms Moshe. Moshe's all upset and all uptight, and Hashem calms Moshe and says, don't worry, right now your concern should be about them. Don't worry about yourself. And Moshe's very upset, and Hashem calms him and says, it's okay. And says the Medrash very beautifully, later on by Har Sinai, we have a role reversal. Hashem's the one who's saying, I want to destroy them, and Moshe's the one who's calming Hashem. So you see that there's an education here going on, and Moshe clearly learns because of the story later on as well. And that's the story in source number 18, where we're up on Har Sinai, and this, I really believe, is the transitionary moment. When they're up on Har Sinai, and Hashem says, look what B'nai Israel are doing, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Ra'iti, and this is in Kitisa, Ra'iti et ha'am hazeh v'hinei am she'orefu, v'ata ha'nicha li v'yicharapi bahem v'achalem, v'aseh otcha l'goy gadol. And this, I think, is the climax, the point of transition in Moshe's life, when Hashem says, you know, look what B'nai Israel are doing. They're worshiping the Egel down there right after they got the Torah. And he says to Moshe, now leave me alone because I'm going to destroy them and I'll make you into a greater nation. And Hashem promises that he'll be even greater. And anyway, Moshe was mistreated by B'nai Israel. They've been complaining to him and fighting with him all along. And Moshe's response, I mean, I only took a piece of it, but Moshe's response, Machenina, clearly he learns well. There's no ego here. You know, it's all about B'nai Israel. And it's exactly what Hashem had taught him all along. And if you see in source number 19, moving along here, and this is the Gemara in Brachos, which my son, who's learning Brachos with Bar Mitzvah, actually was the one who told me about, because Bar Mitzvah first see him, and he mentioned this to me, he was learning with my husband, and it really, it fits us so beautifully that when Moshe, Hashem says to Moshe, I don't have Lamed Bet Zayin for you here, but Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, got cut off, Lech Rei, Ki Shechet Amcha, Asher Halitam Eretz Yisrael, go down, because this nation is doing wrong here. And what happens? Says the Gemara, Lech Reid, Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Amar Lo Kadosh Baruch Hu, Lemoshe, Moshe, Reid Migdulatcha, go down, Lech Reid, you're going down in your Gdula. Klum Natati Lecha Gdula, Elo Bishvil Yisrael, Ve'achshav Yisrael Chatu. Your greatness and B'nai Israel's greatness are intertwined, and now they messed up, so you've gone down in greatness also. Right? Atah Lamali, what do I need you for now? You know, they messed up, I'm going to destroy them, I don't need you either. Says the Gemara, Miyad Tashash Kocho Shel Moshe, Velo Hayalo Koach Ledaber. He was very weak. At that moment, he's weak. He's too weak. He can't do anything, and he couldn't even say anything. The Kevan Shemar Harif Meni V'Ashni Dain, which is told in Dvarim in the repetition of the story. Amar Moshe, Davar Zet Talui Bi. When Moshe, when Hashem said, you know, get away so I can destroy them, or Hanichali. Leave me alone, get away, so I can destroy you, so I can destroy them. Moshe realized at this moment that it's dependent on me. Miyad amad v'nitchazek b'tfilah u'bikesh rachamim. And that's when Moshe got up and had the koach, got rid of his weakness, and he had the koach to stand up to Hashem. And when he says, and he gives a mashal to a melech who's ka'as al b'no, who's angry at his son, and he says to his friend who's sitting there, it's a good thing, you know, you're sitting here because I would have killed him. And the friend realizes, you know, he has to fight for the son. That's what Hashem is saying to him. Leave me alone. Get away from me because I want to destroy them. But if you're here, I can't. And that's what Moshe realizes his role is. And that's why that Tahanichali, the Gemara continues, when Hashem says, leave me alone so I can destroy them, it's beautiful. The Gemara explains, Katuv, Eef Shaila Amrom, Lamech Tafaso Moshe LaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ke'adam Shu Tofes Et Chavarov Bigdo. It's almost like Hashem, Moshe's like holding onto his collar, like grabbing onto Hashem. V'amar l'panav rimono shalom, ein ani menichacha ad shetimcho v'tislach lahem. And he realizes the koach he has. And he realizes that if not he, nobody's going to stand up for B'nai Israel. And that's the transitionary point.
What's the source of Brachos?
So, the Gemara in Brachos is Lamed Beis. Amud Aleph. Daf Lamed Beis, Amud Aleph. So it's a whole long Gemara there. It's beautiful. It's read through the whole thing. Went through the whole thing. And it's really, it's very beautiful. But this is just a piece of it. Anyway, so just to finish up here, again, we're skipping the whole Bamidbar piece, which is very interesting also. We don't have time. But that's certainly the transitionary point. So that's where he goes, really, from doing everything that Hashem has educated him to do, and he becomes that leader, you know, lacking his own ego, putting his own self aside, and really fighting for B'nai Israel. So now let's jump now to the end of the Dvarim, because we can't do this without ending, you know, Moshe's life here. So if you look, and I think it's really, it's such a beautiful thing, the very end of Dvarim, the very last thing that Moshe says before we're told about Moshe and that he died, before we're told about Moshe's death, what does he say in Perek Lamed Gimel? The end of Perek Lamed Gimel, because Lamed Aleph, that's when he goes up and he dies. He says, Ashrecha Yisrael, mi kamocha am noshav Hashem, etc. What does he say? Ashrecha Yisrael. The last thing he says, Rashi points out, Ashrecha Yisrael, le'achar sheparat lahem abrachot, after he gave them all the brachos, amar lahem, he says to them, Mali lifrot lachem klal davar, hakol shelachem. Because I have nothing more to give to you. I have anything to give to you. It's all because of you. I have nothing to give to you now. It's all because of you. All this was done. I'm nothing. I was a vehicle through which you became the nation and you got connected to Hashem. But really, I have nothing more. It's too beautiful, Rashi. There, everything is for you. You don't need anything from me. It's all about you. And of course, that whole, which we didn't do, that whole piece of Moshe being Ish Anav, Mikol Adam. He's such an Ish Anav. He's so modest. He's so humble. That fits into his character also. It's not about me. And he realizes, it's not me. It's all about Bnei Yisrael. And then, you know, moving along here, where in Perek Lamed Gimel, this is where he's referred to, V'zot HaBracha Asher Berach Moshe, Ish Elokim Et Bnei Yisrael Lifnei Moto. So there are two things that Moshe is called, two titles that he has at the end of his life. The Ish Elokim that we mentioned at the beginning, that was part of my title here, the Ish Elokim, and the Eved Moshe, Vayamat Sham Moshe Eved Hashem. So I just want to end with these two points about Ish Elokim and Eved Hashem. And if you look in source number 22, just to understand what these points are, the Ish Elokim, the man of God, he's called right before he dies. So the Netziv in source number 22, Eimek Davar, says very, very beautifully, he says, the Mishum Shaya Samuch Lemoto, he was right by the end of his life, by his death. He says that's where he had the flame was the strongest. He says, Koner Hichba Shehu Mitmotet, Mikom Akom Lifnei Rega Acharon Ha'esh Nechezet V'yesod Ha'esh Behu Mitlakach V'koach. He says that at the end of his life, here Moshe is attaining the highest degree of spiritual perfection because his neshama is about to go back to being with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So right at the end of his life, that's when his neshama is the most spiritual. And there's so many different examples of it. I mean, if you look, you know, autumn time, you know, the leaves are at its brightest right before they die. They go out with a real bang. Or as he pointed out, a supernova, you know, right before a star dies, it's the brightest. And that's what's happening here. He's Ish Elokim here because here he's, you know, has that closest, you know, to the divine, the most spiritual perfection. And that's Ish Elokim. And if you look at the Eved, if you look at Bayam Hashem, Moshe Eved Hashem, he's also referred to as Eved Hashem here. And what's interesting also is that this, you know, which is interesting because you think Ish Elokim and Eved Hashem are, you know, different levels. You know, one is very high and one is very low, but they're clearly both very high titles, and Moshe, Hashem was the one who called Moshe Abdi when Miriam and Aaron, again, that piece that I didn't do in Bamidbar, where Miriam and Aaron speak Lashon Hara Moshe, and Moshe says, Lo Kein Abdi Moshe, he refers to Moshe as his Eved, Eved Hashem, and he's, by the way, also the only person called Eved Hashem, except for one other person at the end of his life, and that's Yoshua. And I know I have the last source here I have is Sefer Yoshua, but let's just look at Yoshua. First, before we finish the ending, and we'll finish with the other sources, I just wanted to show you by bringing Perek Aleph and Sefer Yoshua, just flip to the last source for a second, I wanted to show you how Perek Aleph Yoshua is really a continuation. We're going to go back in 1 minute and finish up. Perek Aleph of Yoshua is really a continuation of this development of Moshe. Look at the first pasuk. Vayhi acharei motz Moshe, Eved Hashem, Vayomer Hashem el Yoshua ben Yun, Mesharet Moshe, Moshe Avdi Meit. And if you go through the whole Perek, I don't have time now to go through the whole Perek, but look, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I underlined it, so I have it in red, but 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 times Moshe is mentioned, sometimes as Eved Hashem, sometimes as the Chazak Ve'emat, that Hashem told Moshe, that Moshe told Yoshua. But you see clearly the Masorah. Moshe did his job. He fulfilled his purpose. And now Yoshua is going to have to take over. And that's why he keeps getting reminded. Look at Pasuk K, right? Lo yitatzev yish lefanecha koy mechayecha kasher hayiti im Moshe ehiyah imcha, like I was with Moshe. Kechol haTorah asher tzivcha Moshe avdi, do all the Torah that I commanded Moshe avdi. Zachar, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Zachar tadavar asher tzivatzchan Moshe Eved Hashem leimar, right? And then Bnei Yisrael say at the end, and then if you look at Tedvav, right? Birashem otav asher natan lachem Moshe Eved Hashem, and then Bnei Yisrael say, Kechol asher shamanu al Moshe ken yishmai lecha kasher haya imoshe. So you see, throughout the first parak in Yeshua, you see clearly Moshe fulfilled his purpose, and now Yeshua has to pick up from that point that Moshe left off. But instead of ending with that, I wanted to end with a medrash, and I realized afterwards it's just a much better way to end. Well, two last things. So we see Moshe as Ish Elokim, we see him as Eved Hashem. Last two points here. If you look at, there's a beautiful Meshech Chachma in source number 25. It's listed yours as 24, but I'm doing that. It's on your sheet at 24. The Meshech Chachma there. It says, Vayichal Noach Ish Adama. The Meshech Chachma, 2 weeks ago we had Parshas Noach, and Meshech Chachma makes a distinction between Noach and Moshe. And he says, Chaviv Moshe mi Noach. Moshe is greater than Noach. Why? Noach, Misha Nikra Ish Tzadik, Nikra Ish Adama. Moshe Misha Nikra Ish Mitzri Nikra Ish Elokim. So I figure we'll come to a full circle. Noach begins being called Ish Tzadik, Tamim Haya B'dorasav. We know the beginning of Noach. He's called an Ish Tzadik. And at the end of his life, towards the end, at the end of the flood, he's referred to as an Ish Adama, a man of the earth. Whereas Moshe, the opposite, starts out as Ish Mitzri and ends up being Ish Elokim. Ha'imyan D'yeh Shnei Drachim B'avodas Hashem Yisra. Says there are two ways to worship God. Beautiful idea here. Derech Achad. There's one person who just stays by himself and focuses on God and meditates and communes with God by himself. And then there's a type that's busy with tzarchei tzibur, that's busy with people in the community, to the point that he puts himself aside, he can't focus on himself because he's so busy with everybody else. Im kein sarif lomar lefia musag azeh. So you say according lefia musag, according to this notion, shezeh shemitvoded yaleh ma'ala ma'ala v'zeh yarav madrigato. You would think the person who's so busy working on themselves all the time and alone and focusing on their own development, that person would reach higher levels than the person who's busy with the tzibur, who doesn't have time to focus on himself. Lachen amur kohelet, etc. Okay, let's continue. Ubecholzot matzanu shenoach hitvoded. Noach, who was the one who was alone, focusing on himself and his development, the lo hochiach et bnei doro, to the point that he didn't have, you know, he wasn't out there influencing his community. Lachen amru alav she'af hu haya roi lechliya. And that's why the, a lot of the parshim say maybe he also should have been destroyed in the flood at the end. He should have been destroyed also. V'rak mitvoded la'atzmo haya, because he was so focused on himself. And that's why at the end of the flood story, he went from being an Ish Tzadik to being an Ish Adama, a lowly person, because he didn't connect with the people of his generation. He didn't have an Ashba influence on them. Moshe Nikra Ish Mitzri, but look at Moshe. And Moshe was an Ish Mishisha, Ufak Legalutz, he went into exile, he was exiled. Shezem Moret Chitut Benefesh, you'd think he would be lessened because of it. He got to the greatest level because of his involvement with the tzibur, because of his oski v'tzarchei tzibur, and putting himself aside, and that's how he raised himself up to that level. And just to finish up, the last point here, the last source, the Medrash Rabbah, the Dvarim Rabbah, in the last Medrash here, followed by the last pasuk of the Torah, last couple pasuk of the Torah, the Medrash, there's a beautiful Medrash here at the end, a lot of Midrashim surrounding the end of Moshe's life, and really finishing up here. B'sha'ash he'idiyu yimei Moshe lipater min ha'olam, when Moshe was about to die, Amar lo Kadosh Baruch Hu, hen pamru yamecha lamutz, Amar l'panav ribono sh'olam, la'achar kol ha'yigia hazu, atau merely hen kravai lamutz, Moshe didn't want to die. He says, please, lo amutz ki achyev asafer ma'aseya, let me live. Amar lo Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem said, ki zeh kol ha'adam, I can't let you live, like it's a destiny of man to die. So Moshe said, Amar Moshe, Ribono Sholom, Davar Achad Ani Mevakesh Mimcha Lifnei Moti. He says, one thing I ask, I want one big miracle, one last big miracle, the Medrash says, that I go into Shamayim, Vivaku Kol HaSharim Shebashamayim Lutehomot, Yerusha Ein Zulatcha. I want, when I go into Shamayim, you should show everybody that there's no one like you in the world. I want my death to bring real knowledge of Hashem into the world, across the board, and they should know it. Minayin shenema v'yadata hayom v'hashvot ha'elvavcha, ki Hashem hu alokim v'shamah mima'al v'al ha'aref mitachat ein od. With my death, I want people to know that there's ein od. There's no other God like you. That you, this is it, that everyone knows about you. Such a beautiful message. Amar lo Kadosh Baruch Hu, atam marta ein od. You said to me, you want everyone to know that there's ein od like me? Af ani omer lecha, Afani Omer, Lo Kam Navi Od Bi Yisrael Kemoshe. I'm using that same lashon back at you. Lechol ha'otot v'amotim asher shlacho Hashem lasot. U'lechol hayad ha'chazaka u'lechol ha'moreh ha'gadol asher asa Moshe le'nei kol Yisrael. That's the last pasuk in the Torah. Why does the Torah end like that? Using this medrash, Hashem's response to Moshe is, you got it, Moshe. You did it already. Your last request is that everybody should know of me, that with your death everyone should know of me. Why does Torah end like that? Do you ever wonder that you are the one, you brought all the otos and the motim, l'chol hayad ha'chazaka, l'chol ha'mara ha'gadol asher asa Moshe le'nei kol Yisrael. You did it already. This was your purpose. Now you could die. You did that. You don't need the last outgoing miracle to do this. This is what you did, le'nei kol Yisrael. I have a relationship with them, with B'nai Yisrael, because of you. That was your purpose here, and that's what you fulfilled. Leave it at that, Adkan. I'm sorry that I went over a little bit. If you have any questions, I know people are rushing to the next...